Hey, welcome back as we gather around the table with South County Outreach, where we take you on a journey deep into the heart of our organization's mission to control poverty and uplift our community. With a couple of guys have been doing that for a while here. I don't know where this is going to go here, but it started off with a lot of hugging here. That's what I don't know.
It did.
Old Midwestern guy like me, that threw me for a loop here.
We can get you up there. We can help you with that. There's nothing non-manly about that.
I'm telling you, well, I sense there's some friendship in the room here today.
I like you. I'm going fairly fond.
I like you.
Yeah, I'm going fairly fond. Kind of, yeah.
I like you guys.
Yeah, I was even rooting for Michigan the other day.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, no, that was
when we
beat
Ohio State.
That wasn't easy. I have a friend who's a big Ohio State fan, so that was tough. How you been, Ben?
I've been good, and you're bringing along your friends here.
I am blessed to have some really amazing people who allow me to be a part of their lives. I'm absolutely blessed to that. We're going to get into that. Hey, let's get started, huh? Hey, I'm Laval Brewer, and this is the podcast that is not just about showcasing our work. It's about inviting you, our listener, to join us in our mission. By offering a sneak peek into our values that shape our poverty prevention efforts, we hope to inspire you to become more involved in creating positive change in our community. And I have one of the most positive change people in my community, our community, with us right now, my good friend Charles.
I'm excited to be here with you. We've been talking about this for a while, and I love you. Mm. I trust you. Mm. I know you. So this is going to be fun and easy. We're just going to dive in.
That is so true.
And did we give him a last name, or is he just Charles? Is he a mystery guest today?
Does
everybody just know Charles as Charles Antis here?
Now we know there's Charles Antis. Yes, the man who believes that people should stay dry.
I sure do.
There's purpose in our lives. And fed. Yes, you have a lot of beliefs.
I do.
We may not be talking about all of them, but we probably will.
Okay.
Hey, when we started doing this podcast, we stopped and said, okay, how do we tell people the behind-the-scenes story of our work in South County Outreach without bragging? Like, without saying, hey, we do this, and oh, we feed this many people, or we house this many people, which we do. But how do we show, like, the character, the values, the what makes us uniquely us? And so we had these things that came along, and we were like trying to figure out not necessarily how to get you on the podcast. That wasn't the goal. We were just talking. Also, I was like, we should have Charles on. And Florida over here is in a marketing director. She goes, what are you two going to talk about? And I was like, we could talk about a whole bunch of things. I don't know what we're going to talk about, which this is the one of those podcasts where I don't have other than the things that we talk about, which is community and friendship and love, those things. So we're like, let's just do it. Now, some people are going to be like, it's Laval and Charles, and they're just going to blah, 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 blah. That's probably going to happen. And I have no problem with that, because I think there are so many people who know you and know your heart and know your character. And then there's people who know you from your social post and probably wish they knew you, your heart and your character. And that is what community is about, right? It's about the human, the individual us, our heart, and our character. And you got a lot of it, right? You got a lot of it. And you give it away freely. So let's talk about that.
Okay.
And I just stole all the conversation.
If I do have a lot of it, it would be because I want to give it away.
I think people get that. And I'm gonna jump into the one thing I think people misunderstand about your generosity, your heart, your character, and your networking. You as a human are much more valuable than you as your company's dollar bill. Like, you and your team as humans are extremely more valuable than what people think is, oh, if the Antis Group could give us X, well, that'd be great. Love to have Charles give me Y. Hey, can you donate to this? Can you donate to that? Sure. Absolutely. And there are times when you can, but the reality is you don't have overabundance to where you can do that for everyone. How does that land with you? What does that feel like when we've had the conversation just a minute ago? What does that feel like when people think of you more about a dollar than they think of you as a human?
I don't know that I feel it that way. I think that I'm sensitive. I'm very sensitive, but I laugh at myself if I'm being hard on myself or if I think someone doesn't like me. But I'm very sensitive because I've learned that I could try to be my best self authentically who I am, even with my vulnerabilities, every day at work and the things that I do, mm-hmm. and try to do that when I come home at night until my head hits the pillows. But there are people that might misjudge me or misunderstand. For example, we talk about the giving that we do as a company. Mm-hmm. That was a hard bias to overcome. That was hard to learn to do that because most of us, many of us, are raised to not talk about it. So I think that at first glance, when I hear somebody talking about their giving, I honestly am skeptical. Mm. And I think that sometimes people probably have that with us because we talk about it so much. But I think the reason we win the love is people do understand, they catch up to our true intention. And the reason they can is we only talk about it through stories. Mm. And in each story, it's not perfect. If I talk about food, I didn't understand people starving and in our area. Laval, you get it. You're there. But I didn't understand it. People told me that there's people starving in Orange County. There's kids and there's seniors. But the only time I could really hear it is when I was at lunch with Heifer International and they were talking about people starving in Bangladesh.
Literally starving.
Yes, I could get bringing them chicken. But when COVID hit, something changed in me. And see, when COVID hit, it really tested our model. And our model said, hey, don't worry about this. There's a thing called social currency. Do good in the world and it'll lift your brand. And then COVID hit and all of our Habitat for Humanity builds were shut down. Our Ronald and McDonald House Meals of Love were shut down, everything. And so we started to lose our identity. And I think that really helped us define what real philanthropy is today. It's not just giving roofs like we do to those organizations. Mm. Because what happened is the first thing that happened when COVID hit, marketing was nervous. Our culture was nervous. We didn't know who we were going to be. But Susan DeGrasse, who was at that lunch with me with Heifer International, she said, again, people are starving. And for some reason then, I believed it. Mm. I got it. And I heard numbers. Kids, half of them in some of the areas aren't getting any nutrition that they need. I heard numbers about seniors that really hit me because I have senior mom and dad. Mm-hmm. Seniors are 25% starving. And so that's when I aligned with one of the other food banks. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do it, but I knew I had to do it because of that story we put out there. We have to solve the problems. Our job is to behave like water, like I learned up there on that roof, mm-hmm. thinking like water flows to find the weakness without bias. Mm-hmm. And that's how we do it on roofs, and that's what we do in community. And so what happened is we agreed to fill the toughest slot for Second Harvest Food Bank on their truck patrol. And now we're doing an advertisement for them, but I know they're your friends.
Yeah.
And so we filled four trucks. We emptied them out, and every Wednesday at 2 o'clock, we went to deliver food because that's what they needed. And something happened there. And I'll tell you the story that happened to me. I didn't have anything making me feel my aliveness. I was fearful during COVID. I was wondering how to lead. And I delivered my first box of food on a second story condo in Lake Forest somewhere. Mm. And I wasn't supposed to go in because it was during sheltered. Yep. Everybody's sheltered. And I took it up to the door. I called her and said it was there. And she said, can you bring it in? And I said, sure. So the door was unlocked. I laid it inside and I put it on a chair. And at that moment, I looked at the side of my eye and I saw a woman coming toward me in a squeaky walker. And she had an old thin nightgown, and it just for some reason scared me, and I wanted to get out of there so bad. Mm. But she was coming toward me and she was saying something, and I didn't realize what she was saying. And finally, as she became closer, I realized what she was saying. She was saying, bless you, over and over, one step closer, ear, bless you, ear, bless you. And then something happened. I put down the food and I turned and I wanted to get out, and she was right up on me. And then it was like I got hit with a wave, like, whoa, I felt like what she was giving me, I felt blessed. Like she was able to give me some kind of a weird blessing. Like I felt like I was right where I was supposed to be. And I couldn't wait to go home to my company and tell that story because I was reconnected again. But the other thing she did that is so remindful to me is she said, wait a minute. And she went down for a long walk down the hall. I heard that squeaky walker. I thought she was getting me a gift, and I was getting uncomfortable wondering how I was going to say yes. But instead, she came back with a used, completely squeezed flat tube of Colgate toothpaste asking for more. So I had a moment there where I got to feel so useful, and yet, oh my God, it's not over. We have to always open our minds in every moment to say yes to things that feel impossible, because my experience for the last 35 years is I've raised my hand for stupid gifts. I'm just saying stupid for the size of our company, committing to over $300,000 7 years ago for the Ronald McDonald House expansion upset some people in my company, but I don't know why. Committing $50,000 to Boys and Girls Club, all these big commitments, and I don't like to mention the amount, but we were losing money on those the year I made both those commitments. But let me tell you, when we dig deeper than we've ever thought possible and somehow say, yes, nothing bad ever happens. In fact, when we look back, it's wow, the flood of goodness, of blessings on everybody, on the brand, the nonprofit, the community, the trade. It's unbelievable. If we had an algorithm that measured it, it would say everybody would do this. And that's why I get so excited. I want to tell these stories. I want to tell other businesses why to partner with South County Outreach. I want to tell them why it's so important that we're feeling that basic need of food. I want to tell other roofing companies, this is why we do it.
Yeah.
Come, because this is that basic need, just like food, it's shelter. That's why Wing Lamb and I, tacos and shingles, man, we can line up together and we can be heard.
Yeah.
Because we're not bragging about it. If you listen to our stories, we're trying to tell you what we're trying to do. And sometimes it doesn't work. It's wonky, but we giggle about it when it does. Something about that intention to show somebody how to do it in another market, no matter where they are, if they can grab it and show us back how they're trying to do it, then as a whole, we become one. We flow to find the weakness. We fix it. And that's there's something beautiful in that. And I didn't mean to talk this long, but I have to finish when I'm starting. I call this model, it's philanthropy. Philanthropy is an old word to me. I don't like to call myself a philanthropist, but I love the meaning of it. The meaning of philanthropy is the love of mankind.
Yeah.
And it's so deep, the love of humankind. I call it our model, which is happy and scrappy. It's not always planned out. Hang out with Wing one day, you'll find out. I call it fearless giving. Mm. We're leaders imagine giving all of their resources, their time, their treasure and talent in an ever-increasing capacity, knowing they're going to sleep better at night and their others. And it's really a model of how generosity and heart are keys to a prosperous and beloved business. And it's the reason our brand is known in trade and in community and in the nonprofit world and the for-profit world that cares about community. And I love that notoriety. I really do, because that's why we trust each other. Mm. We sit in these rooms together and we have a presence, like you mentioned when we started. But in that presence is just learning to open up and be present with everybody in the room and making sure that everybody in the room is the type of person that believes it's our responsibility as human beings to build the bridges all the way to people without access. You are that person. I could have said it much more eloquently, but that's why I'm comfortable. And that's why when we come together and Paul, we start with the hug talk. Yeah, Paul's from the Midwest. Nobody hugs there, I remember. But when I started in the roofing industry, Bill Good and I pumped this idea to adopt every Ronald McDonald House across the U.S. He's the one that called everybody. The first time I hugged him, he was stiff as a board. Every time I see Bill now, he comes up to me and gives me a big hug. So, Paul, from now on, every time I see you, I'm going to give you a big hug.
Okay.
There's something magical about when we can let go of our egos. This, a lot of it's false protection, stuff that we couldn't help put on us when we're kids. When we can tear that down and just become one with everybody we're at, then life is magical, and that's where bridges are built. Plans are hatched where you look back and go, wow, look what we did together. And it's never alone. It's always together.
Can I throw in one thing here?
Yes, sir.
Laval said the nicest story before. I wanted to share that again. He said about the power of hug and what happens when we don't hug.
Oh, yeah. Early on in my YMCA career, I got a book from one of my mentors, and it was about hugging. And I'm remembering another piece of that story. In that story, we were having conversations about men hugging other men and women in the workplace, and that was becoming a non-allowable activity. And he made it very, and we were talking about children too, because I work with children, so it was upfront in our minds, like, how do we show this physical touch in this thing called hug that we normally would do for people who brought them comfort and joy and happiness? How do we do that? So he gave me this book about hugs. And I got to understand that hugs is more than just a hug, right? There are types of hugs. There is a heart-to-heart hug, which you and I, Charles, we often have this heart-to-heart hug, where it's a physical connection where you put your heart right next to the other person, and you don't let go. You hold that connection for a minute, and it regenerates you. It gives you this energy. Side hugs and fist bump hugs. That's you, Paul.
keep your distance.
Yeah, different type of hugs. But the reason why, as we're, and when I'm a storyteller too, I don't know if people really know that. I hold a lot of my stories in because I should probably let them go more often. Ooh. But when you and I have talked about your children at Ronald McDonald House and why you were there, so the connection up to Ronald McDonald House is because of your children and why you were there so that they could touch your skin, so they could be on your body, so they can you can touch them, they can have that feeling, skin on skin. We've heard this many times in other ways, but to have this physical connection with you about that and look and say, I understand why he was there. I would say very selfish, and it, you know what? And it should be very selfish. But in that, the life you gave your children from that is one example of a hug. But the other is this life we give to others. And the story that Paul's talking about on top of this book is there is this Christmas story that always reminds me of this, this touch, because this human activity of touching another human. Mm-hmm. And I just gave the story away. This man was in this food line getting regular meal, and you know, a volunteer was scooping out the food on the plate and giving him food, and she happened to touch him. And he stood for a second and then burst into tears. And she thought, oh my God, what have I done wrong? Like, what did I do to you? And he says, I haven't been touched in years. I haven't been touched in years. Now, I can't imagine not touching another human being for a day, right. With a day, but to not have that physical human touch, that, and from a stranger of all things, the human touch of a stranger is, I mean, for some that'd be like, there's no way I'm going to do that. But can you imagine the stranger who's never had some, or hasn't had someone touch them, give them love?
You remind me of Paul Leon's story, who started, the founder of the Illumination Foundation, mm-hmm. housing the chronically homeless. And his story that really, I think, took us as a community was the story of a veteran that they'd found unconscious under the bridge. One arm. When he came to, Paul was his name. His name wasn't Paul. I'm going to call him Greg. When Greg came to, Paul was the first one he saw. And they found him under that overpass. And he said, Paul, I can count on my one hand how many times I was acknowledged by another human being in the 10 years I lived under that freeway.
Oh, that is travesty.
And when Paul tells that story, you get it. Chronically homeless. I saw somebody chronically homeless last week going through McDonald's. I was on my way to watch Wing Lam. No, I was on my way to an award show or something. I don't remember. It was one of the big nonprofit events last week. It was to do with homelessness. It was Homemade. That's where it was. Yeah. And I was getting ready for we just donated a roof. There's this big FX residences for the chronically homeless.
Oh, the one in St. Anna.
Yes.
It's just opened up.
We just cut the ribbon. And I was on my way and I go through McDonald's. I'm hungry and I get the two sausage McMuffin with egg for $6. I'm going through the drive-thru and they're stuck. There's a homeless man, obviously, and he's blocking the car getting in front of me, and he's trying to talk to them. The cashier through the drive-thru is trying to shoo him away, and I see a police car. A police car's coming, and they're on the phone, and then the woman's scared. And what I know about homeless is I just know that they're what you just said. Mm. They're just acknowledged. I just said, hey, buddy, what's your name? Mm. And he said, my name's Martin. And I may not be his name, it's not coming to me right now. I said, hey, Martin, can I meet you over there by that sign? And he walked over there, and I gave him one of my sausage McMuffins, which, you know, felt really good. Because when I bought the two, I had an idea. It was in my head, something might happen. And I didn't see that homeless person. But then he said to me, my wife had made me coffee that morning. It was in my mug, looks like yours. And he goes, I want some coffee. Can I have some coffee? And I said, yeah. And I gave him my coffee. I didn't want to give up my coffee, which made it so powerful. That was my coffee. I didn't buy it at McDonald's, but I gave him my coffee in that mm-hmm. mug, and I let him take it. And I think that's this beautiful experience, and I'm so happy that I know to ask him his name. And I didn't know that, but on United in Homelessness executive team, like, I've learned how to speak, yeah. like through Bex Hayho, how to talk to people that don't have. I know why you don't go pet the dog of the homeless person. You'll get bit, because that dog survives differently than your dog does. It's a powerful thing when you can pause your life and take off the blinders that by human beings we put up, and you can acknowledge that human being, and then you can hug them. Mm. And you know, I got hugs this morning. I got a hug from my wife, which was that full one. I got a hug from both of my kids, and Gracie reminded me it's going to be the best day ever. I got those things. I got that hug from you. But before I came here, I went to my office, and Susan DeGrassi, my COO, was there. We talked about hugs in the workplace. Yeah, I don't hug people in the workplace every day, but I gave her a big hug this morning. A big one, just like the one I gave you, because it was just that it was the right time. Yeah. It was we had our executive team meetings. We're coming back from the holidays. We're on the same tune. And then there was a finish to that. We hugged each other and we told each other we loved each other.
Human connection.
And I have that in my company. I don't hug Corey, but when I see her at that event, all of a sudden you don't look for hugs, but sometimes that's the best thing you can do to connect with that person and show them that you love them in that human touch way. And it's something that I didn't grow up with. I didn't learn the real power of human touch till the latter part of my life.
But you learned it.
Yeah.
But you learned it.
I learned it.
So I'm going to unpack something you said around philanthropy. I'm going to go way back to when you said you and your team went to Second Harvest every Wednesday and delivered that food. If I'm not mistaken, you weren't building roofs on those Wednesdays.
Oh, yeah. We were busy, and we had to sacrifice that lost work opportunity.
Yeah.
But the bigger opportunity was someone being fed. And I think that there's one key on that is I've learned to judge my activities by impact, not by whose cash register it goes to. So if there's great value in me saying something on the radio, on this podcast, that all businesses, hey, the more you give, the more you grow. If I can get somebody to accept that, oh my God, what a big win. It trickles on forever. And so there's a lot of power in this messaging. I actually forgot where we were going there.
It's all right, no problem. I got you. So in that, you spent money to make it possible for that nonprofit to do their work, like to advance that work, that abundance. Additionally, the times that you have conversations and stories, you're advancing the mission of those organizations. And while they're not hundreds of them, because we have hundreds of stories, but we can't tell hundreds of stories. We can tell a couple of clear stories that connect to others. The ability for you and your company to do that abundance that goes out, we're told that the universe conspires on our behalf. So when we give to the universe, like when we pour back into the universe, in other words, we give up what we have for others, the reality is that it just rolls back to us. It rolls back to us that the water evaporating from the ocean goes into the clouds, and those clouds then redistribute the rain back into the space where they are.
I totally believe that. One way to say it. Yeah. And by the way, I could be at church, and you could use Christian language. I see it as language. Mm-hmm. Universe is a language. I like universe because it's accessible to everybody, even if it sounds weird. I use universe too, but that's exactly how I feel. That's one way to say it. I believe in that. I believe that's the highest form of action that, you know, again, watching the behavior of water. And the first thing, if you're testing for leaks on roofs, is you have to let go of guessing, because you guess and you're wrong. So you have to follow the trail of water. You do a water test, and you have to. So there's a not knowing principle that goes in. And that is really, I think, one of the reasons the roofing industry is so generous is I've discovered this. They don't talk about it, but every roofer I know, every foreman of every roofing company I know, every one of the technicians, the ruferos up on the roof, someone they know or love or met that doesn't have access has a roof leak, and they may cuss before they do it, but they'll say, oh, hell, go patch it. It's a generous industry. It's, if you were Wing Lamb, and I've seen him handing out tacos, and how does he not give that thing which he has so inherently in him? And so I just spoke to the roofing industry last week at Best of Success Roofing Magazine's ideas, the best ideas in the roofing industry. And I really told that story, and I was able to show them how you donate all the roofs to Ronald McDonald House. You donate all these roofs for Habitat. But I want to make a point that I think is really profound. It's not just the roofing community. It's a human condition. We're all meant to be abundant and flow. And I got to tell the doctor on an airplane moment. Can I tell you that?
Yeah.
Okay. You've heard me. I'll tell you in one sentence. The time I gave away my first roof, I didn't plan it. I went there to sell leaks, but instead I smelt mildew. I tried to get away. This woman had a terrible expression. The little girl sees me. She's got a visitor. She pulls me into her room to show me a poster on the wall, but that's when I looked down and saw the moldy mattress that she slept on. And here's the point. I didn't stand up right away. I was standing, but I couldn't move. I didn't say I was going to do anything. I wanted to get out. I wanted to get away. But the mom came back in that room with her frown, that expectation that I wasn't going to do anything like no one else did. And something in me came up because it was almost like I knew, if not me, who is better suited for this situation in the whole wide world than me right now with my roof truck outside. And so I said, I'm going to take care of your roof, hoping it was just a hole in the roof. Mm-hmm. They needed a whole new roof, but something shifted in me. Mm-hmm. And I think the point is we all have moments, and I'll prove it. Let's take ourselves off of this earth. Let's imagine Lord of the Flies. And you're going to see, you're going to hear a little bit of the pig head on a stick, but I'm going to tell you what human beings do at their highest. Because I was on an airplane with my family. We were on our way to the Roofing Alliance meetings in Florida 3 years ago. And we're taking off. We're just about over to Arizona, and suddenly we hear that noise.
Excuse me, this is your captain speaking. We have a medical emergency. Is there a doctor on board?
And that is a pin drop moment. Just like me in that house, nobody, I've seen it twice, nobody stands up right away. Finally, somebody does. It's a guy behind me. Oh, I got to tell you before, I got to get to the stink of it. It's a stinky situation for everyone on the plane. When there's a medical emergency, the guy two rows ahead of me is looking at his watch. Mm-hmm. He has a gold watch. He's shaking it. He's upset. He's missing his connection. He knows right away, please don't turn the plane around. Please, that's what he's thinking.
Yeah, don't land this
I'm
plane.
Going, I'm starving. I got to get to that. I got to get a food in my belly. I got to get a good night's sleep. Everyone's selfish. Everyone's frustrated. Finally, the guy behind me stands up. After about a minute, it might have been 30 seconds. It felt like a couple minutes. He stands up. He's got a stethoscope around his neck. We're like, oh, God, he's a doctor. A woman stands up across the aisle. Within 3 minutes, they've got the whole plane commandeered. Everybody's passing their napkins. We need blankets. We need ice. Everybody's dumping their ice into a bucket. And the whole plane shifted. The mood shifted. The pilot came on. We're turning around to Albuquerque. We went and we landed in Albuquerque. By the time we landed the plane in Albuquerque, nobody was upset. The whole plane stood, and we gave the crew that pulled him off and that doctor and that other doctor a standing ovation. And we were so happy. The guy looked at his watch. It's like he got in on one of the greatest moments in life to see the highest of human behavior. And all the way to Florida, which we arrived 5 hours late, we celebrated. The guy that stood up behind me, the tall British man, wasn't a doctor. He was the dive medic in Long Beach at the Aquarium of the Pacific. But he was the most qualified.
So all of a sudden you realize that's me.
That's me. Like it was me in that day. The woman that stood up, she was a chalk nurse. The same place that treated Charlie and Gracie, my twins, that I didn't tell that story. The chalk are the ones that told me to pull my shirt off and lay skin on skin, that would help them heal. And it's this moment became so powerful. My kids, who were scared in the beginning too, they got to see this best of humanity. Mm-hmm. And I think that when by the time we landed, I used to talk about a doctor on airplane moment, never had it. And then it's happened to me twice. And this is a beautiful experience. And I hope you get to see it someday. It's not Lord of the Flies. There was a moment where people were complaining, but the highest of human behavior, if you allow it to be, it's not to hoard. I used to think I gotta hoard this money, I gotta save it for myself, I gotta work long hours, I gotta lowball. Man, no.
It's the other way around.
It's the opposite. It's imagining giving it away. It's an inside and outside more than I ever thought possible, and then sleeping better at night. It's the opposite in many ways. Yeah, you work hard, but I've been inside a hoarder's home. It's a disease. No different than you if you're storing it all up for your kids. You're giving them a disease. Teach your kids how to give it away. Don't store it up for them. Look at what happens to second generation wealth. I am, and third generation wealth. Teach them to give it away.
Yep.
That's what we're meant to do.
Do not store it up down here. Yeah, store it up in heaven. Give it away. You cannot rebuild. You cannot get more grain in the storage bin unless you pull grain out of the storage bin. Like it won't work. It will rot. It will never be used for good. It will put you out of business. You got to give it away in some way, shape, or form. Now, you can't give it all away, but you got to make room.
There's that. Oh, yeah. It's not like it's clear. It's not a black and white line. I'm not a hat. What if I lose? What if somebody sues me? I lose everything. I got to take care of my kids. Yeah, there's that right amount. I don't know what it is yet, but it might be enough to get them a start on a home. Or I don't know. I'm figuring it out. But it's not like, here, take the keys to this and go crash. And I'm not saying they would crash, but look at what happens to families that don't learn to go out and build it and share it like we used to do. And if you go back a couple hundred years anywhere, when industry is being built, and companies used to take care of their community, they had to. My grandpa, he worked during the Depression. He came west, and
the company
he was,
town?
He was just he came west. They had no work in Arkansas, so he came west. He was pulling beets in Idaho, odd jobs. He finally landed a job in the 30s in McLeod by Mount Shasta, California, for McLeod Lumber Company. Mm. And it's interesting what they did. And I'll tell the story in a couple sentences. They built the best schools and the best hospitals in the state, paying more money for their educators, more money for their doctors. They even built, you can Google it. If you have a leak in your faucet or a light goes out, just call Ma Bell or whatever. It wasn't Ma Bell, but it was the name of the whatever the name was for the McLeod company. Call Mother McLeod and they'll take care of it for you. But the coolest thing, my grandpa, who died about 8 years ago, but every time I saw him, he'd tell me the story. Yep. Charlie, by God, we had that minor league baseball field they built for us. And because of that, I played on that team and I actually got a tryout for the St. Louis Cardinals. And he tells that story. He struck out because he drank too much the night before, and he's like, my grandpa was fulfilled. They put everything back into that community, and yeah, they were developing it, but why has that changed? Mm-hmm. But I think that there's all this independent wealth, all this insurance wealth, everyone's hoarding when there's plenty out there, and so it's not easy to get two sides to decide on how to do it, but there is a way to do it for businesses, and that is we become really close and intimate with organizations like you. Yeah. And the other thing about happy and scrappy philanthropy, fearless giving, is it's not just giving roofs. I am best if we hold blood drives. That's why we've had our 150th. It's going to be in 2 weeks. We've raised over 12,000 life-saving treatments of blood. We're a roofing company holding blood drives. Why does that work?
I was telling someone this morning about that blood drive.
Susan DeGrassi's on the board. She's my COO. She's happy. Everybody's happy.
Get this. I was at a doctor's appointment this morning, and I'm getting these allergy shots, and the young girl who was helping me that this morning, I was saying, oh, yeah, I can't give blood for about a year because I'm getting this special allergy research. She goes, oh, that's too bad. She goes, you give blood? I go, yeah, I've given 50 times. She goes, 50 times? And I go, yeah. Actually, the person I'm doing a podcast with today, his company sponsors blood drives all the time. And she looks at me, she goes, I should give blood. And I went, yes, you should. Literally because of our conversations and our relationships and me saying that you do blood drives and that I give blood, she went, I should give blood. This is a medical person. She works in the doctor's
office. But it's clear. We're just busy. We're busy.
Yeah.
But it's worth a pause on that. I want you guys, thank you for pausing on that because I sometimes forget. I want to remind all the listeners that we can't make this stuff. We cannot manufacture blood.
I'm all positive.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, and you have the super baby blood there.
Yeah.
It goes right to a newborn infant. You have the, but anybody's blood, we can't make it. And they can't store it for that long. So when you finally get it and you give it, it's beautiful. I'm not saying I give all the time. I don't because I have a thing with needles, but I do give, and we hold the drives, and I don't give as much as you or Ed Hart.
Don't hold yourself against myself.
Man. I have passed out when I looked at the needle before.
Then don't do that.
No, but I can give blood. Yeah. I get acupuncture too. I just don't ever look at the needles. That's what I tell my son.
Yeah, my buddy Eddie will pass out in blood, but he's a generous person. Hey, we're gonna have to move on. God, we could talk forever. We really could. For those of you who have not actually talked to Charles Antis, We could do that.
So, I think you guys could go on for days. One story leads to another story.
I do have a lot of questions.
Oh, my God. The amount of stories that we actually have together, and especially if we were to bring someone else into the conversation, feel bad for them. Hey, well, we got to do this.
I'll never cook on your show again, I'm saying. I will, but they didn't even give me a knife. You gave me a spoon.
So we were doing this video a couple of years ago, and Charles and Wing came in, and it was, what can you make out of a food pantry? Like, with food you could pull together, and Wing made this delicious meal. But as we're going in, Wing hands Charles a spoon and basically says, Charles is like, can I get a knife? He's like, no.
No. I felt like Gilligan or Steve Martin in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. I was that character.
It was so funny. I was sitting there, and I was just like, oh, no. I understand.
That wasn't okay. My best day.
No, we won't tell you the other part of the story. All right, so let's ask our three questions for you, man. So you've got three questions here. I'm going to say them really quickly so everyone knows what they are. You know,
and if anybody who's going to answer them, I'm waiting to hear Charles's answers to these three questions.
You haven't heard my answers yet.
So. No, that's true. That's false.
So the three questions are, who influences you, favorite food from childhood, and who would you like to sit around your table?
Okay.
All right, so who influences you?
I'll start by saying my father, because I find that I quote him. My father is alive. Mm-hmm. He has some dementia. It's really difficult for me right now. He just moved down from Oregon. But I find myself, I always say, Dad always told me to do the right thing. He did. Mm. My dad is, I respect him so much. He always, I've seen him lose his temper, but I've never seen him make a decision on wasn't the overall right thing to do. So that's been a guiding force in my life. But it's really who influences me. I have to speak further as you do. Everybody I spend time with, I become part of them. I'm literally, you are the equivalent of who you spend your time with. And I notice that if I raise my hand to show up with people who believe it's our job to build bridges to everybody, even if I'm uncomfortable, even not knowing what's going to happen, if I align myself with those type of people on my team, then that's who I become. And I'm very disciplined on becoming a happy, somewhat self-actualized version of myself, just so I can have peace and feel good about myself. Men, when you hit 50, it's going to hit you, men. And it's, women get this earlier, but sometimes it stops being about what you accomplish, what you accumulate. It starts to become, oh my God, how do I leave everything better that I touch? Mm. And everybody I influence, and I'm not saying, sometimes I think somebody's toxic who's sitting next to me, but there's those moments in the universe where I can be next to that person and suddenly, oh my God, realize that we're the same. So I'm not saying, but for the most part, I hang around people who have what I want, and that's who I become. That's why I sit on boards. Mm-hmm. I don't know why it works that way, but we physically become, we spiritually become, we discover the same desires and fears of the people we spend our time with.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
I don't think I should influence you. You don't know.
You influence me really good.
You don't know. We don't know the other bad parts of our lives. So.
Don't need to.
So, your favorite food from childhood?
That's tough. I just remember my dad cooking on the barbecue. Man, he would like barbecue these pork shoulder roasts. They're crispy and juicy. Or he'd make these T-bone steaks, which is an Oregon cut. And I would just love every time he would make that. And the other childhood thing that I absolutely couldn't get enough of was pizza. Specifically, if you've been to Oregon or Northern California or Washington, Abby's Pizza.
Abby's Pizza.
Abby's Pizza. All I could, right. I would eat it, and it would burn the top of my mouth off, and it would be, the skin's peeling off for days, but it just reminded me how good that hot, greasy pizza was, and I would put it in my mouth and burn the top of my mouth
Nothing
off.
Nothing like a good greasy pizza.
Yeah.
Nothing like a good greasy pizza. Okay, of the many people who have asked you to sit around their table, who would you like to sit around your table? You can only choose one person.
Oh, is that right?
You can only choose one person.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I'm cheating.
I had a really huge list.
I know, and I'm going to let you say it, but who's the one person first?
Right now, for some reason, I have my grandpa, great-grandpa Townsend in mind. Mm-hmm. My twin son, Charlie and Gracie, Charlie's my son, his middle name is Townsend. And Grandpa Townsend just has an influence that I don't quite understand on me. I see his picture looking at me in the hallway. He was the first Antis in our Antis line to go to college. He wasn't in the Antis, but in my family line to go to college. He went to Cambridge, and he studied under a professor, and he learned business. And I think maybe that's why he was a really good businessman. And I know because my father gave me a few years ago the book, the text he had in college, signed by his professor from Cambridge. And he died a couple of years later with tuberculosis in Florida, where he lived. But there was something about the way that I feel that he held himself that goes from generation to generation. And I think I would love to know him. And some of the quotes that I've given people out of that book, principles in business that were true 130 years ago that are still true today. So I think that Grandpa Townsend would be a fascinating, I bet you he would be, he's probably involved in my life and somehow I don't understand like now, like all my grandparents, but I would love to sit down and talk to him about the way I'm running my business and see what he thinks.
I'm sure it will be a blessing to him and you.
I hope so.
All right, buddy, I'm sorry, we gotta take this off, and I don't have my outro, so I can't tell you what
I'm ready. I got you covered.
All right, so hey, thanks for being on here with us. I just so love you, and I hope everyone else gets a chance to have as much of an intimate conversation with you about what you believe, your vulnerabilities, your networking, your friendship, your generosity, your human spirit, your family.
We're all one, and you believe that, and I believe that. Yeah. We're all family. In my business, we see it as we're all family. In my community, as much as I can, we're all family. And you live that. And I love people who live that way, that we're all connected.
Before we go out, Paul, you can cut this out later. Before we go out, you tell the story about the first time we met.
Yeah. He didn't hug you like he hugged me today.
No, actually, it leans into this conversation.
Oh, no, that's a great point. I guess you were a lot alike.
Yeah.
We've learned to wear a lot of our real self out and show. A lot of people have had to hold it back. And we've had to for whatever reason. But when I notice someone like myself, there's a real moment. Who's that person? Who is this guy? He's loud in a room. He's drawing a lot of attention. And I think, and you're good at helping people know maybe how I'm perceived. Because, and maybe I'm just a bitch. I'm sorry, that's the wrong word to use. I'm going to cut that. Maybe I'm being weird.
See, we're so much alike.
But, but the first time I saw you, it was at a...
Charles Antis weird? No.
Let me get to, so I'm going to lose it. The first time I saw you, we were at, Dan McQuaid was there. He was the CEO of 10C.
Yeah.
And you would come in, and you were the COO, I believe, and I just met you, and you were from YMCA, but I never really knew you there, and you came in, and you gave a speech to, there were youth there, there were leaders there, but you had a ball, like a volleyball in your hand.
I had a red rubber ball.
A red rubber ball, and you gave a stirring talk that I still remember about this ball, but you were big in a room. And this is the part that I think I wanted you to tell you when I brought it up is that when you meet someone like that, you don't know who is. And sometimes people aren't who they pretend to be. And so maybe that's a good test. But by the second time I met you, because I didn't really get to know you that day, I started to see he's the same way. This is who he is. He is all in, and he's taking everything he has and risking it all in that moment. And I think that's one thing that you have in common with me. Mm-hmm. I see it in John Patterson, the OC Autos Group, mm-hmm. as the Mazda and Hyundai. At any moment in front of his team or community, put a camera in front of him, he's putting everything in and risking it all if he can just deliver what's really happening right now. And that's because when someone comes in that strong, they're either that person or they're maybe a fraud. And now most of the people I come in contact with are not frauds, and I'm not looking for frauds. I don't want to send that message. But you came in so strong, I had to weight check. And I didn't try to. You just kept coming in and, well, this guy's for real. You really care. And that's what you showed that day. And I felt it. It was a strong presence. And I think there's something about presence that I would love to nail in some podcast someday. Why do people have presence?
We can definitely around talk, it. We can definitely talk about that.
But you have presence, and I love it.
And everyone knows that you do, too. And to sit on that a little bit, we both have these vulnerabilities. Like, we've actually talked about it a little bit. We won't talk about it here. Vulnerabilities, fear, all the other human behaviors and all the other human emotions exist in us. And then there are people who are like, oh, no, they're like, you know what? There are moments before I go on stage where I'm scared to death.
Sure.
I'm scared to death. I'm like, okay, what's going to happen? And I think what you just summed it up, and I hadn't really thought about this before. It's my fear is I am going to go all in. Like, I am not, like, depend upon the audience, of course. Depend upon the audience. I've looked at the audience. I understand who I'm talking to. I went on stage before Peyton Manning one day. Mm. He was giving the speech, and I was the warm-up.
Wow.
At a hospital conference. Mm. And I'm coming on before him, and he's coming on afterwards. And I'm sitting there going, what in the hell? Why am I here? Mm. What is going to happen? I don't know any of these doctors. I don't know what Peyton's going to say. The CEO, blah, 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 blah. And I just stood up there. I still don't remember what I did. But I stood up there and I, let's go. But right before I went on, I was in the green room. Oh, my God, what have I gotten myself into? What have I gotten myself into? And then the minute that light came on and I walked on stage mic'd up, it was go. Just go.
You were in tune with the audience. You had soaked them in. You knew where they were. You knew where you were. And you knew where you wanted to move them.
Yep. It was towards the light.
Yeah, love that.
In a sense, I didn't think of that, but it's always towards the light.
So that's why I don't want to completely know what I'm going to say until the last minute.
That's why we didn't know what we were going to talk to you about when we came in here today.
That's what makes it interesting.
All right, hey Paul, thanks a lot. Let's take us out.
Okay, let's do it. Join us again as we continue to gather around the table and talk about creative and effective ways to combat hunger and homelessness here in our county. Brought to you by South County Outreach and Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio. Streaming live from our studios here at the University of California Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.